This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded for the 26th time on April 15, 2016. Kevin and K. Scott are on the call. We are actually recording. The recording in progress light is on. We're trying a new recording system this week, so we're getting some good practice on it.
Oh, for so. Two so far.
Let me see. Some stuff that happened recently. There was Build. Probably the most interesting thing at Build, I think, was Bash announcement. So neither of you guys had played with this yet, right?
No, not me.
No, I didn't realize he could get it working as yet.
So I was actually pretty surprised. You can, it's in the latest Windows Insider previews, and there's like a little
What is this Windows Insider preview thing? Do you have to be on some special list to get this?
No, you go to, I think it's insider.windows.com or something, or just, you know, Google for Windows Insider. Or actually, no, you don't even... I'm not sure if you have to do that. I think you do, like you sign in, you know, with a Microsoft account. But then inside the control panel on Windows 10, there's a thing on the updates tab. And you go to, you say, like, I would like to get, you know, previews. Or I would like to get more regular updates or something like that. So it's on Windows, the Windows update thing. And then there's an update settings. And you, I think you go to advanced options. And then you say yes. Yep.
Get
and
insider then, preview builds, which I've been afraid to click on. Have they been stable?
Yeah, they've been good for me. I mean, yeah, in fact, as far as like stable and working well, like there's more new good, you know, like things get better each release of it. So there's different options on it. There's an insider slow, an insider fast. And so if you get the slow, it's kind of like more the like, you know, it's slower and fast, I think, comes out like almost every week.
Okay, I'm going to click on it right now.
Do it. Or maybe after the call. But yeah, all it does when you do that is then it'll notify you like there's a Windows update available.
Okay.
So let me see. Things I've seen people complain about with it is occasionally, I see this a lot less now, but occasionally earlier on it would overwrite your defaults. So like if you had defaults, you know, if you changed all your defaults to open up, say, you know, audio or video files with VLC, for instance, then next time around it'd be like, I couldn't read your default, so we're switching you to the, you know, Groove or whatever they're calling the audio and video player these days. So that's one thing. Other than that, though, I've been pretty happy with it. And yeah, you know, it just ends up doing little things. There's like a lot of nice little, like as an example, you get updated versions of the Edge browser. And so it's got extension support in there and, you know, just like, you know, like some neat little things.
So can I just say that it kind of bugs me that Microsoft still uses this like insider sort of labeling on their stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I guess the term harkens back to the old days where they really like were people that had special permission to get early access to stuff. And now it's broader than that. But that labeling has just always grated on me. In fact, did I read this right? That there was like, I remember seeing something about like an insider build of Visual Studio Code at one point. Am I remembering this right?
So that's
like what? You know, it says an open source editor and you're labeling it. Like what the...
This is the kind of things that Bernie Sanders will change if he's elected.
Yeah, and so that's another example where it's like there's an insider version. Click here to download. Like, you know what I mean?
So right. So why? Why insider? Like what?
All right. Well, what would you call it?
I don't know. Insider to me like implies special privilege, which is not
adopter build.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't. I guess it's trying to make like it not scary and sound fun and like, hey, yeah, I'm a early adopter, but
like, come get your secret decoder ring and
right.
I'm gonna add it to my email signature, Windows Insider, as soon as I click this button.
I'm just a sec. I'm putting it on LinkedIn right now.
Member Windows Insider Program, Visual Studio Code Insider Program.
Exactly.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah, so Windows Insider, pretty easy. And then, you know, it just gives you more notifications of like, hey, there's an update available. So it installs the standard like Windows update thing. And I don't know, Windows installs pretty fast these days. So yeah, I don't know. I've been pretty happy with it. I'm trying to think of other features, but it's so definitely Bash is one of them. And they have like a short little walkthrough on here's how to enable Bash. And so on the next release that came out basically right after build, then there was like a little walkthrough. And you go to turn Windows features on and off. And then, so you tick a checkbox that says enable Windows. It's some ridiculous name. It's like Linux on Windows subsystem support or something like that.
Of course.
Yeah. So so you click that, and then that's basically, then you go to a command window and you type bash. And when you do that, then it says like, hold on a second, we're downloading, you know, support files for it or something. And it does that, and then it's just at a bash prompt. And so I'm on my laptop right now, and I just, you know, I type bash, and I type ls, and I type, you know, I can do apt-get and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of like a non-event once it was there. Like, it was fast, and, you know, it's just bash. So
meanwhile, all the Z shell people are up in arms.
right. Yeah. I guess, you know, the main thing for this is like the big disclaimer is like, number one, it's a preview. And number two is it really is focused on, like developer scenarios. So like if there was something that you couldn't dev with on Windows, you know, before, like, you know, obviously like Rails being a good example, like, you know, Ruby apps on Windows, kind of a no-go. And so with this, the demo they did at build was actually like, developing on a Ruby app on Windows and then publishing it to, I don't know, I think it was Docker on Azure, and, you know, like, it all just worked. So
does it like include all the dev tools, GCC and all that stuff as part of it? Or do you install that separately as packages? How does that work?
I think you apt-get all that stuff.
Okay.
So I just type GCC. What's going to happen? I don't know. It's like, oh no, my machine's on fire. I typed GCC and it just went to the next line, and I don't, oh, there it says the program GCC is not currently installed. You can install it by typing apt-get install GCC.
So there we go.
There's our answer. Yeah. So
I'd be curious if things like Git and NPM and things like all the file watcher things that people use in web development, I'd be wondering if they'd be any more efficient, because I've always thought that things like Git and NPM were slightly faster on the other operating system that I use than they are on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it's and so I'm not sure at what level that works, because they're using the Windows subsystem support.
Yep.
And so it's,
could be worse.
So these are ported, they're running in user mode, and then there's like this translation layer where then it like translate it. So, because that was something too, that like there's some fundamental different things between Windows and Linux, like at the kind of deeper layers, like fork, yes, and stuff like that, right? So I'm not sure, like, if the speed, where that speed difference is at.
I'm curious about how, like, where the seams start to show up, where the uncanny valley is, like, when you start dealing with file system stuff, and it's, like, where does the translation start to fall down? Mm-hmm. I haven't heard much about that yet.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm, like, I obviously have Git installed on here, but then I type Git at the bash prompt and it says not installed, use apt-get. So,
oh yeah, like, does it support soft links, for example? Like, can you do ln-s? And what does that actually do in the file system?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. So interesting. But yeah, so I mean, I guess good as far as like, here, just a second. I'm going to cat something. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, yeah, that's, I just, you know, cat and gave it a JavaScript file and it reads it out to me. So, I mean, you have file system access to it. It mounts it as a device. But yeah, but you can't have, I guess you can't really have processes calling back and forth to each other, or I'm not sure how that would work, you know, like, so you can't have a Windows app like doing something that relies on the Linux support. I don't know. Interesting.
It's one of those things, like, it seems like a technically impressive feat, it also sort of feels like an admission of defeat to a certain extent that, like, you know, oh crap, Unix yeah. is taking over, you know, like we better get on board here. Everybody's going to keep buying their MacBook Pros and they're not going to want to buy our Windows machines.
So. What's next? Android apps on Windows Phone? Come on.
Well, you know,
emulate all the things.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, like, that was the demo that I helped with of Miguel's was an iOS emulator running from Visual Studio. And then they did that on a Surface Book, and so he's using touchscreen. And, of course, it was, like, paired with a MacBook we had backstage. It was, you know, it was required to run that. But, like, so, yeah, it's true. And then they also showed an Android emulator. So, I mean, I guess, you know, yeah, big picture, like, it's realistic. Like, people are developing for all different kinds of platforms. They're developing for mobile. They're developing, you know. And so I kind of like personally, it's like, look, we all know, you know, people aren't just developing for Windows, you know, and, like, just be practical and make something that, like, make Windows a decent platform to develop from. I don't know. I'm happy to see it as a developer. Hmm. So
yeah, definitely. And Sigwin can go die in a fire now.
I didn't use it much. You know what? One thing that I'm, you know, maybe more interested or as interested, SSH is one thing that always is a pain in the neck on Windows. Mm. And mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, if it just does SSH well from Bash, I'll be happy there.
That'd be good.
And of course, they have these big disclaimers like it's a preview and it's really only used for, you know, like the idea is just command line development tools and that kind of stuff. You know, like it's aimed at, you know, apt-get, you know, like just that sort of stuff. And immediately people are like, hey, look, I got, you know, this 1985 version of X Windows or whatever, you know, with this weird old Linux windowing system running, you know, and posting their desktop screenshots and stuff. So who knows what will happen next.
I want to see who the first guy that gets Wine running in Bash running yeah. on Windows. See how far
you know, and yep. There's all kinds of interesting things too. Like what happens if you call in, like, I wonder the level of support, you know, like, cause that's always been a thing in the past. Like people would say like, hey, Microsoft should do this. And they're like, then we have to support it for, you know, this many decades or whatever, you know? And so it's like that must've been an interesting conversation when they're like, are we seriously going to do this? All right. Right. You
know? Yeah. Do they adopt Microsoft's backward compatibility model or Linux's backward compatibility model?
Right. Yep. So, yeah. So I don't know. That was the main interesting stuff at Build for me. Other than I also worked on this lab, and it was an ASP.NET Core. And one of the more interesting demos we did for that used Angular 2, and we did a master details thing. So it was calling into ASP.NET Core APIs on the back end, and it had a master and a details grid on the front end, which sounds totally boring and unsexy, but I wanted to build something like real world people would actually like, the kind of apps people have to build. And I was pretty happy with Angular 2. Like the last time it's definitely a lot simpler of a model than when I learned whatever I learned of Angular 1.x, the whole kind of move from, I don't know, there were just so many different concepts to get wrong in Angular 1 and Angular 2, like components seemed a lot simpler. So I know, okay, Scott, you've done a decent amount with Angular over the years. Like what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I started working with Angular 2 in December once they got the beta out. And I think that component model is a lot simpler. I mean, we could say things about Angular 2, though. I've seen a fair amount of resistance to it in a few of the circles that I work in, just because it's quite a leap forward if you really want to go with ECMAScript 6 or ECMAScript 2015 or TypeScript and the new binding syntax. And it's just everything looks completely different, even if a lot of the concepts are the same.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I've had to do some work with Angular 1. So I looked at the latest Angular 1.5 release about a month or 6 weeks ago, something like that. And they've also introduced a component-based programming model for Angular 1 with that release. And it's wonderful. I mean, it is so much simpler. And instead of writing controllers and templates and directives with isolated scopes all over the place, you can just write components. They choose all the right defaults for you. It's a much easier programming model. It actually feels like something that's been thought out. And actually, to me, it feels a lot like some of the old Microsoft UI type frameworks that you would get and work with in Visual Studio or with Visual Basic, where you design these UI widgets and they have properties and they have events, and it sort of all, I think, actually makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can you transclude though?
You can still transclude. all we need now is the new UI designer. You know, we need the Visual Basic 6 drag and drop editor for Angular apps.
Angular Basic.
It really does seem like, so, I mean, I occasionally see on Hacker News, like people will post these, you know, like people will get something working, and but I don't know how much people would actually use it. But it does seem like something you could build out, like the tools for, you know, visual tools.
Right.
Oh, somebody eventually, like whenever there's a JavaScript UI framework, somebody inevitably builds like visual builder, you know, visual GUI builder for React, visual GUI builder for, you know, it will happen. I guarantee.
Yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying too about it. Like, as I'm looking at it, like, first of all, like Angular 2 really does push you towards TypeScript. And then there's so many new concepts, both in TypeScript and in just ECMAScript recently and Angular 2. I'm looking at it, I'm like, is this JavaScript? Like, you know, it seems so significantly different.
Yeah, the TypeScript thing just seems like a huge, I mean, you don't have to use it, right? But it seems like they want to push you there. And that just seems like a big barrier to me. That, you know, there's...
Yeah, you don't have to use it. You can just use plain ECMAScript 2015. You can also just use plain ES5, even though that's just, it's really ugly when you do that. They just, you know, they built this primarily so that you could write classes and use module syntax to get things to work. And the TypeScript thing is interesting. The TypeScript thing, I actually resisted using TypeScript for a couple years. I was attracted to it. I could see some benefits to it, but I just rejected it as going to be something that was going to become a headache later down the road. And I've changed my mind a little bit, at least when working on an Angular 2 project. There are some benefits. And now that you can use TypeScript with Sublime or VS Code, and I can get a TypeScript compiler via NPM and get it working on my MacBook, that made me feel a lot more comfortable with TypeScript.
I just have to say, like, you know, same sort of thing where, like, once I started using it, I was like, well, this is actually kind of nice. Like, the syntax, there's so much stuff that's changed anyways with ECMAScript over the years.
Exactly. I've talked to a few other developers who've looked at an Angular 2 program, and they say, oh my gosh, all this TypeScript stuff, I can't stand it. And I'd be like, okay, actually, if you just take out this one type annotation on this line and this one type annotation on this line, everything else is actually JavaScript via circa 2015.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big difference.
Yeah. And it really does need the component support. Like they really did buy it's very like forward looking as far as using, you know, newer features in as like in the component model.
It is. I don't know. To me, it still feels a little bit, it still feels very explicit and a little heavy compared to Aurelia, which just uses a lot of convention to achieve a lot of the same thing.
Yeah. I guess I was just, in comparing it to Angular 1, there was a lot less of ceremony to it. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole Angular 1 API was just weird. It was all just weird.
Yeah. It is interesting, like, timing-wise. Like, there was this big backlash on the Angular 1 to Angular 2 move, and there was a good amount of time of, like, what do we do now? I don't know, move to React or whatever, you know? And so it'll be interesting to see, like, momentum-wise where they're at.
It does seem like React is getting large portion of the mindshare these days. I read a lot of posts these days. Well, we're migrating from Blah to React.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, yep.
And I really like React as long as I never view source. Like, it really is. The idea is like this: it's all generated. Like it's in a way, in a bizarre way, it's like way back to web forms days where don't worry about your HTML; someone else is going to write that for you. Just, you know what I mean? Just move your components around and you know. So I mean, it all works. It's just like then there's times where it's like, oh, I'll just go and do some CSS stuff, and I'll, oh my god, what is this? You know. There are some ways that simplified a bit recently, but it is. But with that caveat, like it's really pretty clean for, again, it's all components and you nest components and there's the life cycle. Like all you worry about in each component is just the life cycle of that component. And then the whole kind of like the unidirectional flow in React also is pretty simple.
Yeah. That to me is the crux of it. After spending years on writing backbone code where you're like fiddling CSS classes on and off based on events and like just essentially doing away with all that, it just saves you so much just headspace, you know. It's just so much stuff you don't have to think about.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, there's, you know, I'm seeing more about React Native, and they just announced like a React Native support for Windows, and you know, they've had it for other platforms too, and so that's interesting to see as well. I mean, I'm not sure how that compares to, you know, something like just using Cordova, or what the kind of performance is compared. But that, yeah, that's, you know, again, then it's like the idea is you get good at React and, you know, you're able to build web and mobile and all over the place. Yeah. Neat. All right. So, K-Scott, you recently got a new laptop.
I did. I waited until build was over to make sure there was nothing new coming out, at least not in the immediate future, and then bought a Surface Book. It's really, I had a Surface 3 before that, but it's really the first piece of PC hardware that I've bought probably in 4 or 5 years.
So you didn't look under your seat, because there was, under everyone's seat, there was a Surface Book. I've played with them a bit. I heard some complaints like when they first came out as far as like stability. Yeah, but then like with recent updates, like my friends that use them are like, oh, it's the best laptop ever. I love it, you know.
I like it a lot. I think it's the best piece of PC hardware that I've had in a while. For one thing, it just feels good in your hand. It's like you pay $2,400 for or whatever for a MacBook, and it feels like you paid for something that had some quality. Where over the last few times that I bought Lenovo's, because I've bought Lenovo's for like 15 years, you could easily spend $1,800 on those, and they just come out feeling plasticky, and they flex weird, and the keyboards are terrible, and the trackpads are always really bad. The Surface Book is great because you can spend as much as you do for a MacBook on these, but the build quality feels really good. It feels solid, feels like quality laptop. The keyboard is good. The trackpad is much better than it was on the Surface. It has a glassy feel. If the Mac trackpad is a 10 out of 10, this is probably like a 9 out of 10. Like, it's still not quite there, but it's a lot better than the other PC trackpads that I've used over the past 10 years, because I've never been a trackpad fan.
Was it, mm-hmm. Does it click, like, what's the click? Does it have the click action on it, like a Mac trackpad?
Yeah, it does. You can. You can tap on it to get a click, or you can press down a little firmer and you get some feedback because it'll click on you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the trackpad for me is one place where the, like, no PC that I've ever used has been even close to even a 5-year-old Mac's, you know, trackpad.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Mm-hmm. And this isn't, like I say, this isn't quite the MacBook, but it's close. I mean, it's good enough. I haven't been irritated at it like I have with every other PC trackpad, so that's good. And it's got a touch screen, which is useful. It's actually sometimes easier just to go out and touch something or swipe up and down on the screen. That's always useful. Of course, you can detach it and use it just as a tablet. And as a tablet, it's kind of large, so it's not the kind of thing that I might take and read in bed. In fact, I went back, I was using my Surface 3 to read a lot on. It's a smaller screen. And since I have the Surface Book now, I got out one of my old Kindles to start using it to read again, because it's so small and easy to hold. But it's a good laptop. I like it.
So you're not going to buy the new Kindle then?
Now that I'm using a Kindle again, I was actually looking to see what they had. Now.
It's funny. I moved off a Kindle back when I started getting more and more into listening, like I would have it read to me. It had this read aloud feature. Mm. And then I got hooked on that, and I found I was listening more than I was reading. And then the newer ones, they removed that support. And so then I was like, heck with it. I'll just go all audiobook all the time. So I'm listening to War and Peace right now as we podcast.
So you just don't read anymore?
<Just kidding. laughs> I don't read. You know what? I think I read enough while I'm programming and working and emails and all that crap, that when I'm not working, I'd rather like listen, you know? So I let other people read to me, and I, and then I like have over time, like I keep listening faster and faster. So if whatever app I'm using like supports high speed playback, then I, you know, listen at higher speed. So
do you just find it infuriating to talk to normal people now because they talk so slow?
I totally do. It's funny. And then like when I listen to podcasts and stuff too, I always listen to those at high speed. And then I talk to the people in person. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, you're just, you know.
Did you take a Quaalude?
So, right, exactly. Yeah. So, but like, so for instance, I mean, recently I've been, I'm going this summer for a vacation. I'm going to this tour of some World War One and World War Two battlegrounds in Northern Europe. And so I'm like, oh, I know nothing about World War One, you know? And so I actually started listening to some books and podcasts and stuff on World War One. So, and again, like listening at high speed, it's like cranked through them really fast. So,
what do we think about a $300 Kindle? Is that, what'd you guys think of that announcement?
Yeah. So I honestly, like, I was like, do I care about this? I'm like, I don't know. Not really. I don't know. I couldn't think of a feature that I would get interested in a Kindle for. Like, I just, yeah. I associate like reading with work now. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I guess that's my answer.
That's kind of sad, John.
Yeah. Well, no, the one thing I read to my daughters. So I read to my youngest daughter. I read her books. So that's fun. But yeah, that's about it.
You know, my oldest daughter is such an avid reader that like we're like, you know, we'll go to the library once a week and pick up 20 books for her. And like 3 days later, she's read them all. I'm wondering whether whether Kindle could be our salvation here, because you don't have that monthly, you know, read all you want kind of stuff. But I don't know what they have for kids' books.
They do have a lot of, they have deals with a lot of libraries. So like,
yeah, we have that. We do that too. But the selection is just not that great on that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, so what was new in this one? I guess it was like the higher DPI or something. I don't even know.
No, it has the same DPI as the previous one, I think. It's 300 DPI. It's two big things that I remember were it actually has physical page turn buttons again. So they've gone retro.
Yeah.
And then it had this like special battery case where, you know, the case is an extra battery. So like the whole thing lasts 3 months without having to charge it.
Oh, right.
But yeah, it seems hard to justify that price in the age of tablets for just an e-reader. I mean, I actually like e-readers. I used to have a Kindle before it got stepped on.
Right.
And I like the idea of it for the kids too, because if we give them a tablet, then they'll just sit and play on the tablet. Whereas, you know, on a e-reader, that's all they can do. And me too, not just the kids. But yeah, just seems really hard to justify that price.
Yeah. I mean, the e-ink and reading in the sun is nice.
Yeah. Like,
that is a good feature.
Tell you what, though, Amazon knows what to do. I told you that story about once I started with the Surface Book, I got the Kindle out and booted it up for the first time in, I don't know, maybe 2 years at least. And like the day after I do that, I get an email from Amazon telling me I can trade it in for one of these new things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, with the battery life thing, is that a big deal? Like,
I never the battery life, even on my old Kindle 3, I think it was ridiculously good. Like, it was never even an issue. It was amazing how rarely I had to charge that thing. So in this day and age of, you know, you have to charge your watch and your phone and your tablet, like, having to charge something once a month is luxurious. Like, once every 3 months is not a huge win.
Mm-hmm. I guess the main thing that it would do is, like, you know, like, the chances of you picking it up and it having a dead or almost dead battery are a lot lower. Like, you know what I mean? You don't have to think about the battery as much,
right?
I guess. So speaking of battery, I got myself a smallish treat, but I got a battery that, you know, like, you have those portable batteries now that you can charge up your phone. So I got one that will also charge my laptop. And
how portable is that battery?
Yeah, it's not that big. So it's iPad size-ish, I guess, you know? So it's, yeah, I know, it is, but it's like, it'll recharge my whole laptop an entire charge cycle, and a phone like 10 times. So like for an international, like, so I don't lug it around all the time, but for an international flight, I don't care if there's no power. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's handy. And then of course, now that I have it, you know, my kids are always trying to borrow it from me and stuff. But I was surprised. Like it's actually not that big and it's not that heavy for what it does. And it so the cool feature with it is like it has higher voltage output. So it can output, I guess, up to 20 volts or whatever. And it has like 900 different, or it has a bunch of different adapters for.
I was going to say, how do you plug into it?
Yeah. So it has adapters that work for, you know, like most, like all the major tablets and laptops.
Including Macs?
So it has, I believe so. Yeah. Yep. So I was like, I didn't know they made these things. And I don't know how I randomly stumbled across it. And I'm like, I wonder if it works. And, you know, so it actually did work. And I was like, this is amazing. Because especially for me on a long flight, that's my one nightmare scenario is like dead battery and just sitting there. Like, I can't do that. I don't know what I would do. But I guess I would read the aircraft safety instructions just over and over.
Convince somebody to read it to you so you don't have to.
Right, exactly. We've already established I've forgotten how to read. So, yep. So I don't even know. Are there any other new like products that have? There's speculation of what's going on with MacBooks and stuff, but I don't know. Is there new Apple hardware that's happened recently?
Well, the new iPad Pro, the smaller iPad Pro, 9.7-inch iPad Pro was their big one.
Oh, and then the smaller iPhone.
And then the smaller iPhone. Yeah. Yeah, the iPad Pro one is interesting. Everybody keeps raving about how amazing the screen is. I haven't actually seen it yet. The ability to use the pencil on it is definitely pretty compelling. I mean, my wife's a designer. She's sort of an artist. So I think she could do some pretty cool stuff with it. I am not, and therefore probably could not. But I've played around with it a bit on the big iPad Pro and was pretty impressed. But that's one of those things, too, where I feel like give them a couple generations of iteration on that thing, and it's going to be flipping amazing.
How about, do either of you guys have a watch, the Apple Watch?
I don't. I've been tempted to buy one at various times, but I'm holding out for like the V2 of that product.
Right.
I definitely want to get one at some point, but I want to see what they can do in a generation two.
I have a Band 2, and that definitely was a huge difference between the Band 1 and Band 2. Like, Band 1 was okay, but it definitely, like, comparing the design on the Band 1 and Band 2, the Band 1 now looks like a kind of a science project. Somebody kind of, like, just the shape is weird. It's not very comfortable. It doesn't look like it's been designed at all. It looks, you know. But I'm really liking the Band 2 for, mostly for notifications for me. Like, I use it exercising and it'll track sleep and that kind of stuff. But I mostly use it for just, like, not taking my phone out of my pocket.
Yeah, that's kind of my main interest in the Apple Watch also, that exact thing. Mm-hmm.
That's and the Apple Watch, I mean, definitely, like, is more, like, the Band is pretty limited as far as what kind of app stuff it'll do. Apple Watch, bigger screen and, you know, more, like, we'll do more app-wise, I guess, but, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, definitely, like, I'm interested to see these versions keep getting better and the whole kind of wearable thing being less of a geeky thing and more useful. And should we wrap there? Do we want to do a lightning round?
I had one question for the lightning round.
All right.
It's a lightning round.
Will the Windows phone be dead in 1 year?
I hope not. I just ordered one.
Did you?
Yeah, I'd been sitting on the fence for a while. So I had a decent Windows phone, a Lumia, and then we moved our family from Verizon to AT&T. And so as part of that, like, my phone doesn't work anymore. And then I was like, I don't know what new phone's coming out in the near future. Who knows if they'll secretly announce one at Build, who knows, whatever's, you know? And so I'd been kind of sitting on the fence, and I had one of those blue phones. You originally recommended those as kind of a budget phone, K. Scott.
So, yes.
And it's been pretty decent. And so I've been running the Windows 10 Insider Builds on that as well. I'm saying Insider. I'm in one sentence. Can I say Insider and OS X to annoy Kevin?
No, but you could say OS 10 and Outsider.
So anyhow, I've been running the Windows Insider builds on that and pretty happy with it. And then I was like, you know, oh, but the one thing that stinks about it is the camera is kind of so-so. Like, it's not that good of a camera. And I'd been spoiled with the Lumia cameras. So anyhow, I just ordered the 950 XL. Yeah, I got it off of eBay. Ended up getting from someone that bought it for Verizon. I was like, oh, wait, this is an AT&T. So anyhow, so I hope it's not. You know, honestly, it's interesting to see because it works really well with Windows 10. Like, Windows 10 on a phone is actually super nice. It's frustrating because it's like market share wise, like, no, you know, nobody's using it. Nobody's like seeing it, but I'm like, wow, this is actually super slick. Like, it's everything. Like, I was never unhappy with the speed or whatever of my previous Windows phone, but then installing Windows 10 on it, it's like, whoa, it's like smoother and the animations are nicer and the settings are super nice. And just a lot of, there's a lot of like great features on it. So it's interesting to see. I don't know.
Yeah, actually got one of those at the end of the in January. I was on a golfing trip and dropped something on my other phone. And so I was in Orlando at the time. And I just went to the Orlando Mall. There's a Microsoft store, bought one of the phones. It's a pretty good phone. Then there was an offer to get a free docking station with it. So I sent off for that and got a docking station. And it's really pretty wild to hook up a phone to like a 37-inch Dell monitor.
How does it work?
Do you use that at all?
It actually works decent. I mean, then I can pull up Word on the phone and edit a Word document that's stored in OneDrive or whatever. And it was an okay experience. You know, if it's like something I had to do because I was in a jam, I would do it. Could do it.
It seems like something you could do, but like if you have, you know, a few laptops sitting around and a desktop, like I wonder how often you actually would do it. You know?
Well, that's the thing. Yep.
Yeah.
That's the only, I hooked it up once to try it and it works. I'm like, hey, that's cool. And now it's just,
yeah. Cause I didn't get the docking station with mine and I was like, yeah, I don't really need it. Like, I think part of, you know, like a place where it makes sense is like, there's all over, like say for instance, all over the third world and whatever, there's people around the world that don't have like a good computer, you know? So if you've got like a powerful phone, and then maybe like that is your computer basically, you know? I mean, for a lot of people, they use their phone pretty much as their computing device anyways, you know?
Yeah, they do it anyways. They just do it on the small screen and they mostly can.
Right.
So it's not a super compelling thing to be able to put it up on a big screen.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're writing, I haven't lived the lifestyle, but like I could see like 90% of the time I'm on my phone, but I've got to write a long email. Well, writing a long email on your phone kind of sucks, you know, or like editing a document, like somebody emails you a document. I could see a case where, you know, like I'm not an information technology worker. I don't need a computer. I just need occasionally to like, you know, edit or, you know, brush up my resume or whatever it is, you know, and send it off. Like, it could be nice to have a big screen, especially if you can like plug it into, you know, you don't need like, I can hook it up to my TV or I can hook it up to whatever, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I think my take is that Windows 10 is not dead. I mean, Windows Phone is not dead. It's just undead. It will just sort of carry on for a while, getting less and less resources assigned to it. And, you know,
it's interesting to see because now that it's Windows 10, like it really is it's merged together with Windows 10. It's not such a huge thing where it's like before it's this incredible, like there were a lot of people involved in building and shipping Windows Phone. And now it kind of seems like, it's another place I can install, you know, like it's another thing that runs Windows. From that point of view, it seems like it doesn't have to be such a huge separate effort. I don't know. Yeah, well, so my Windows Phone better not be dead for a while. So, okay, Scott, you're not running any of the Insider previews then, is what I'm guessing.
On the phone, I actually think I am, yes. And I just got another update this afternoon. I don't know exactly what to put on there, but something.
It's funny, like, I realize I'm one of the few people I encounter in my day-to-day life that gets excited about software updates. That I'll like, you know, my wife or kids are on their computer and it's like, you haven't installed updates. What's wrong? And they're like, I don't want to deal with that. I'm like, no, they're great. You get new features and maybe performance improvements and security enhancements. So awesome. You know, like, get away. Yeah. All right. I think that was a lightning round.
That was a very quick answer to the question. Yeah.
All right. Should we wrap there?
Sure.
All right. I think provided
how do we make sure that this gets saved somewhere?
So I believe as soon as I stop, it uploads all this stuff to my Dropbox.
Okay.
And we'll just see what happens. I'm going to hit stop.
You connect it to your Dropbox?
Did you do an outro?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Outro.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening to Herding Code. And maybe we'll talk to you soon. That would be nice. And
professional.
Exactly. And goodbye. Join us next week when
Scott Kuhn
says,
send me more information by email. Send me more information by email. Send me more information.